Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Hello, good misty morning to you wherever you are. On the programme today, tax breaks or other incentives for landlords. Will the exodus only be halted if they're paid more? We'll debate. Nearly €1,000 to kit out a first-year student. What do we do about ever-spiralling back-to-school costs? Is the four-step rule out of date in hurling and football? Referees tell us how difficult it is to enforce. Singer Lizzo is facing allegations of sexual harassment and weight shaming. We will have the details. Met Aaron join us to explain the nuts and bolts of how they make their weather forecasts and lifting your own suitcase into the overhead locker, playing outside with the grandchildren or walking upstairs. How to create your own octogenarian decathlon and prepare for it even in your 30s. Text us this morning on 51551 or you can also email todaycb@rte.ie. We're going to open up one of the stories from the headlines there. Yet another indictment for Donald Trump. I want to read for you the words of Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent of the New York Times, writing in that paper this morning. In the long annals of the Republic, the White House has seen its share of perfidy and scandal. Presidents who've cheated on their wives and cheated the taxpayers, who abused their power and abused the public trust. But not since the framers emerged from Independence Hall on that clear, cool day in Philadelphia 236 years ago has any president who was voted out of office been accused of plotting to hold on to power in an elaborate scheme of deception and intimidation that would lead ultimately to violence in the halls of Congress. Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent, as I say. This is now the third time in 4 months that Donald Trump and his allies have been indicted for their efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. And there are more charges to come. Joining me on the line is Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. Marion, indictments for campaign fund fraud already, civil cases from alleged sexual assault victims, and an imminent prosecution in Georgia, all in the background. But is this the big one?
I think it is, Philip, on a number of levels. But I think also, and not to get ahead of things here, but for my money, the case in Georgia, which Fannie Willis is saying is ready to go now, is also a really big one. The reason being, this is a state prosecution. Jack Smith's indictment today, which is seismic and it's historic and it's frankly depressing that America has, you know, when you read the indictment, it's like, my God, this, you know, you have to remind yourself that you are talking about America. But with the Georgia indictment, she has a smoking gun. Now, there is no doubt about that. She has on tape Donald Trump basically intimidating, strong-arming and threatening the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and ordering him to find another 11,780 votes, I believe, which would be enough for him to take the state from Joe Biden. So that, I think, is also going to be a big case. And because it's a state case, there's no pardon. There's no pardon. There's no commuting that sentence. So that is also a potential big headache for Donald Trump. But back to today's case, one indictment at a time, I think. It's frankly depressing. It was a very short, somber 3-minute press conference by Jack Smith. And he basically just set it out. He urged people to read it's a 47-page indictment in total, which I have done. And, you know, it's really shocking. I mean, we all sat through the January 6th committee public hearings, and we, you know, a lot of us read their report, but this really boils it down to some pretty hard, cold facts. And it really does remind people of how close America came to basically fumbling its democracy.
What I'm really interested in getting to the bottom of here is how strong a case is this? Because we have seen before, particularly in the electoral campaign fraud stuff around Stormy Daniels, it looks like a slam dunk until you scratch beneath the surface, and then it's not really that strong a case. How strong is this indictment?
This, to my mind, is a very strong indictment. And I think the reason it's very strong, there are four counts. OK, so there's conspiracy to defraud the United States. They've got a lot of evidence for that one. There's conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. Again, there seems to be an abundance of evidence for that. And then the third count is obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. It's kind of like the second one. And then the fourth one is conspiracy against rights. Now, they may all sound a little bit vague, but in fact, they're very specifically tied to very specific evidence. Now, it's interesting to me, and I never thought for a moment that he would, but Jack Smith has not in any way tried to claim or to charge Trump with inciting a riot on January 6th. So all of these charges go to what Trump was doing mostly before and to a degree slightly after January 6th as well. There is nothing that says, okay, on the day you caused this riot, you caused this violence, you caused the deaths of five police officers. He has completely steered clear of that. And I think that that's smart, because it could be argued that Donald Trump was just exercising his presidential and First Amendment rights in telling, you know, his supporters to protest at what he claims he believed was a stolen election. So I think that the way Smith, he's a really solid prosecutor. The way he has laid out this indictment, it's pretty tight. And, you know, again, you know, in terms of a jury, and I would say that Donald Trump, he is absolutely, it goes without saying, entitled to a fair trial. It may be hard to get a jury in D.C. because people have seen all of this on TV. They've seen and heard so much. Yeah. Nobody's going to come to this cold and not have heard anything about it before.
Now, Marion,
so it's going to be tricky.
We've known all of this, all of the content of this for quite a long time. I've put down the Michael Wolff book over a year ago, and that really seems to have everything that's in this indictment. What we really want to know, though, and tell me, is it obvious from the indictment, has somebody turncoated on him? Is there somebody in there who was inside the room who was going to give evidence against Donald Trump?
Well, if you look at the six co-conspirators, now it doesn't say they're unindicted co-conspirators. It just says they're co-conspirators, which suggests to me very strongly that they're going to have a world of legal pain of their own very soon. And it's kind of quaint that he doesn't name them, but he describes them. I think it wouldn't take a genius to deduce that it's Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Sidney Powell. And they were, of course, the triumvirate of crazy lawyers, the ones who were going out there saying, you know, we can do this and this, and you can basically tell Mike Pence not to do, you know, like all the crazy stuff, the crazy press conference which I attended when Rudy Giuliani's hair ran down the side of his face. He and Sidney Powell and John Eastman were all the main characters in that. And then you also have a couple of other people. Now, there's no doubt that Jeff Clark from the Department of Justice, who was going to take over and become acting attorney general, and send off a letter to various states saying, hold your horses there, don't send up any electors to Washington. This is all a fraud.
But Marion, the problem with all of those people,
well,
the problem with all of those people is that it was even Donald Trump said that some of them were crazy, so they're not going to be particularly good witnesses. Is there, do you think, somewhere in this indictment, somebody of solid character who is going to give evidence against Trump?
Well, what's interesting to me is that Mark Meadows, who was Donald Trump's chief of staff at the time, doesn't fit the description of any of these co-conspirators. So he was subpoenaed by Jack Smith. He had to speak to him. He did apparently turn over a bunch of emails and other things as well. I suspect that Mark Meadows, who really hasn't been seen, we haven't seen hide nor hair of from around Washington, D.C. in a very long time. He certainly hasn't been hanging out down in Mar-a-Lago with Trump or in Bedminster. He's sort of disappeared. I suspect that Mark Meadows has decided that, to hell with this. I'm not jumping under a bus or being thrown under a bus for Donald Trump, and that he may have been giving information to Jack Smith. There will be, I think, a lot of people of pretty strong character who have no reason to lie who will be called to testify in this case.
Okay, Marion McKeown, thank you very much. I'm also joined now by Boston native Larry Donnelly, law lecturer in NUIG as well. Larry, we get to your assessment of the strength of this indictment in 1 second, but big picture question here first. In your lifetime, the USA has now slipped from Castle on the Hill to this. It really is quite the dramatic end to the American century, isn't it?
Yeah, it really beggars belief at this stage. I don't think any of us envisaged a scenario where American democracy would be at this nadir. And I think that's all you can call it. But it really is down to a confluence of numerous factors that led to and precipitated the election of Donald Trump, and still leads a vast swathe of America and Americans to look at this and say, there's nothing really to see here, which is quite extraordinary.
So back to what we were discussing with Marion there. Does the strength of this indictment lie in the strength and the credibility of the people that will be giving evidence against him, or is it in and of itself a strong indictment?
It's an extremely strong indictment. And as you say, there really isn't anything much new here. We pretty much knew most of this stuff, but it lies in the way Jack Smith and his team have expertly crafted this indictment. I agree with Marion. I think that they were very wise not to go near incitement, because I think the president would have asserted his First Amendment rights, and I think he would have been successful on that. But if you look at what is contained in painstaking detail in the indictment, and you look at one of the charges, that is attempt to obstruct a process, that is the ratification of the election results, it seems to me that they have the former president dead to rights on this one. I don't think he has any defense whatsoever based on what's contained in the indictment and based on some of the people who gave evidence and who cooperated. In particular, I think this really stands out, is the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, where the Trump team said, look, 30,000 illegal immigrants voted in this election. The Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, a Trump ally, a diehard Trump supporter, said to him, simply, that is false. We reject that entirely. Yet they still conspired to change the result in Arizona. I think that's very, very powerful and damning against the president.
Maybe it's not, but it certainly sounds to me like a novel charge, attempt to obstruct a process. Is it one that carries a standard penalty?
Well, all of these charges contain potential prison sentences. And look, there are four charges here. You know, I'm only citing one of them. And experts in the field and criminal defense lawyers across the United States, including some I've talked to, have indicated that clients of theirs, now, of course, their clients weren't former presidents of the United States, have gone to prison for a lot less than what is contained in here. So it remains to be seen how it will play out. But this one, just like Mar-a-Lago, just like what's pending in Georgia, are all very serious. I happen to believe the New York one, to speak bluntly, is a load of garbage. I don't think that's going anywhere. But these other three, I think, are very, very serious.
It could all be rendered moot, though. At what point does Trump effectively become immune from prosecution? Is it when he wins the Republican nomination, or might it be that day in November 2024 when he could very easily win the White House back?
These are novel and uncharted questions upon which constitutional lawyers would disagree, because, again, this is unprecedented stuff. We really don't know the answers to some of these questions, although some will proffer them, but we don't definitively know what the answers are, because we've never been in this situation. What I think we're going to see here is, you know, a fascinating, it's a simultaneously fascinating and depressing interplay between the legal system and the political system. And of course, that charge of election interference, this is all about interfering with the 2024 election. That is going to be the mantra continually of the Trump campaign. And how that resolves itself is going to be fascinating to see. And again, there are some who claim that Trump's real point in running for re-election here is to deflect attention and then hopefully win and then pardon himself from everything else, because especially in particular with what's laid out here, his defenses are pretty minimal.
So much of this is, as you say, unknowable and lives within that very, very hard to define area where politics and the law interact. How, or do you agree with the assessment of some who'd say if he isn't prosecuted, or if he is prosecuted, if it does actually proceed, that you could actually be fomenting civil war in the United States?
I don't know. I mean, look, I have, in the past, I have downplayed that. I never envisaged that January 6th could happen. I tend to think that that prospect is unlikely. I still do. Look, you know, January 6th in many ways changed everything. Do I think there are a certain radical hardcore of Trump supporters who God knows what they might be capable of? Yes, I do. How widespread that is, what it would ultimately lead to, I'm not so sure. I'm not one of those dire prophets out there who think that we're that close to the brink. But again, we are in difficult and uncharted territory.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer in NUIG, thank you very much for giving us that assessment this morning. Coming up after the break, should landlords be incentivized to stay in the market?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.